You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The Athletic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. My name's Sammy James. Welcome to the show, brought to you by The Athletic UK. And it's a big pod today. We're going to discuss Fulham's second 0-7 win of the season at Reading on Tuesday night, which takes Fulham back into the top two of the Championship. I can't believe what I'm saying. I was flabbergasted the first time we won 7-0 on the road. The fact that we've done it twice in the same season, the first ever team to do it since 1895-96, is absolutely astonishing. So much to get through in today's pod. There were so many talking points from yesterday's game. But of course, it is not all fun and games. This is a work event. And joining me today are Thursday Club regulars Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
Peter Rutzler.
Hello, guys.
And as it's a special pod, we thought we'd get a fourth opinion. George Cooper, hello.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. And I very much am fine, thank you. You cannot see Fulham win 7-0 away from home and the next day not be fine, thank you.
It's a bit rude, actually. Like, it's about as good as it gets in terms of football. And you're like, how was last night? Oh, fine, actually, yeah. It was better than fine, Sam. It was unbelievable.
It was capital letters, fine, thank you. Jack, let's do some three-word reviews from last night.
Right, so, I mean, there was a clear favourite here, or everything. I'm going to have to start with it. I don't normally do this. I normally finish with the zenith, but it's so good that I'm going with it. Stefano Friani with 007.
It's astonishing.
How good is that? It is absolutely astonishing. It's really, really good.
I honestly think it may be up there as one of the greatest ever. Like, and that's high praise. We've had a lot of great three-word reviews over the years, and our old friend Richard Bamber, who gives us about 20 a game, will be upset. But that is a next level good three-word
review. Just a trivector of perfection. You've got the occasion, you've got the pun, you've got the execution, all three boxes ticked.
So good. So, so good. And as we know, we love a, you know, boxes ticked system at Fulham. So, you know, it really is. It really is. I thought, you know, a little light reading was going to go down absolutely storm. But, you know, absolutely, I've got a bow to a power far greater than my own. That was exceptional from Stefano. A couple of other ones. Cheese FFC with Mad Stad Stat Pad, which I thought was good. Patrick Brown with pure postponed pleasure. Thurb 62 with make sorry reading. Doug Ibling with touchdown Fulham Jaguars and Fulham home runs with no dry January. Very, very good. I enjoyed them. There was lots of good ones last night. There's a lot of puns you can do with Reading and Royal. So, you know, you're going to get some things in. But yeah, it was the Stefano one blew me away. So good. So, so good.
So I put it on Twitter last night and I said, am I allowed to play the horn? And
no.
I got a mixed response. I got a mixed response to it. And obviously some people are like, yeah, do it. But a lot of you said no. And I was kind of leaning towards no myself. But I feel like scoring 7 goals needs something. So not a horn, but I have made a special sound effect for whenever Fulham scores 7 goals. And I hope to wheel it out maybe a couple more times this season.
And next. Why not?
And next. So without further ado, here is the new 7 goal sound effect.
7!
You've got way too much time on your hands. I do worry about you sometimes.
Not really sure what I was expecting there, to be honest. But yeah.
Bit of Len Goodman, drum roll and a cheers. So that's the new 7 goal sound effect.
Fantastic.
But
the horn can come back into action if we win against Bristol City and we win against Birmingham, because that will be three wins in a row and that would be Fulham top of the league no matter what. So if there's nothing else to cheer about in the next two games, if there was no other motivation for you to support the lads in the next couple of matches, the fact that the horn can come back should hopefully be the motivation that everyone needs. Marco, us, the team, whoever. Let's get into the game, Peter. History being made again. You saw Fulham get seven goals up at Ewood Park. I remember not going that night and thinking to myself, I'll never see it. That's something that has passed us by. I will never get the opportunity to watch Fulham score seven goals away from home. And here we are, just over 2 months later, and they've done it again.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. And I think it was Dom who came on the podcast and was basically saying, look, you know, these, you've got to try and get to games because this is quite a special Fulham team and you're going to get some special nights like this. And I think the stat you read out at the start, Sammy, I mean, it just sums it up. You know, it's unprecedented in the modern era in modern football. I think, you know, Marco Silva was very much playing it down afterwards, but even he said, you know, it's quite hard to do that in this day and age, to get a scoreline like that. And you know, to score seven goals away from home without reply twice in a season and we're barely halfway through, it's ridiculous, to be honest. After the first half, you probably didn't really see it coming because, you know, the first half wasn't exactly a dominant display. And then second half, just the floodgates opened. And it's it's really hard to digest, to be honest. I mean, especially compared to how few goals we saw last season. But just how good Fulham can be, you know, how when they're on it, they are just irrepressible. They are unstoppable, and they're just so horribly ruthless. You know, nothing's lost on anyone when Marco Silva turns to Rodrigo Muniz and you're 6-0 up already. I mean, come on, for a second striker, not even to take off Mitrovic or anything like that. I mean, it's brutal. But we love it, and it's great to watch. And you just got to get to some of these games. I know recent form wasn't great, but this team does have the potential to do it. And it's, an extraordinary night.
I mean, George, everything fell for Fulham last night. A, Reading being utterly terrible, but also Scott Dan's injury after 6 minutes definitely changed the game as well. And just the way that it went, Fulham got into the lead and it was a mistake from the Reading fullback, but also the fact that we saw the Andy Carroll disallowed goals. There was the penalty shout on Andy Carroll, which was dubious. Very, very, we got lucky there. And then for Fulham to score right before half time, the first half played into our hands massively and set up what was an astonishing performance in the second half. But you don't get the second without some of the luck or maybe lucky breaks that we got in the first.
Oh, 100%. And you look at that Tosin challenge on Carroll, and if it was a stonewall penalty, even from the limited angles that you get on the little 2-minute replays that you get on YouTube. And when we were there at the night, everyone just was like, that was a penalty. It would have changed the whole dynamic of the game. And we were very, very lucky. And I remember the bicycle kick from Andy Carroll. I don't know why he's trying to attempt to emulate his hero, Rodrigo Muniz, with such acrobatics. But it was a blinding, obviously offside, but an absolutely incredible finish. And it was, you know, so I remember we were all just laughing. It was a beautiful moment, you know, when those things go your way at football. And then for 60 seconds later, for him to score, which I think is arguably the better goal of the two, the way he just controls it on his chest and wallops it. Rodak standing there with his, you know, absolutely left for dead. There's no way he's getting anywhere near that.
Is he standing there though, George, because the offside flag goes up about 20 seconds beforehand?
I thought that, but I do think that he wouldn't have, it would have been... I know it makes you look like you're stranded when, you know, the play has been called. But however, I do think that that's going in regardless, even if he does try to attempt to make it. It was an amazing, amazing strike. I remember turning to you, Sammy, that on the evening and after we saw those two Andy Carroll disallowed goals, saying this is already worth the trip. This is already worth the trip to Reading on a Tuesday night. And then, but yeah, I think arguably the most important one of those three is the penalty just before half time, because it just gives Fulham that extra buffer. And if we're going into the second half with a one goal lead and anything happens, the thing we said at the time with that Reading team is that they feel like a five-a-side team that have two good players and just three ringers who are just absolutely diabolical. They had the feel of a team that perhaps in the first half could have nicked a goal. But yeah, that goal that Mitrovic got with the penalty just gave us that buffer. It gave us the confidence to move on and, you know, really turn some screws and punish Reading. But yeah, it could have. The first half was definitely pivotal.
I will disagree with you on the second Andy Carroll goal. I'm here with Jack that I think Rodak would have saved that. I don't think it was that good a strike. It wasn't that into the corner, and Rodak had completely stopped. Even in the ground, we knew already before he struck that was an offside. The overhead kick, we had no idea. I had my head in my hat. I had my hands on my head going, oh, shit, when he scored that one. And then the juxtaposition of instantly the flag going up, which shut up those Reading fans, who were to the right of us, was absolutely glorious. Jack, just your overall reactions to Fulham doing this again. Some of the football in the second half. My favourite is that Mitrovic pass to Harry Wilson, which then sets up Niskin's Cabano. But that is just the tip of the iceberg of some of the brilliant stuff we played in the second half. Yes, Reading fell apart. Yes, they were woeful, but it was mesmeric, and the expected goals from Fulham being over five.
Yeah, you still got. It doesn't kind of matter who's up against you. There's two sides to this, right? One is it doesn't matter who's up against you. You've got to beat them, and you don't need to do what Fulham do to teams. You know, you see teams ease off when they've put a game to bed, and Fulham could have eased off, and no one would have hugely blamed them, I don't think, considering the amount of fixture pile up that we have going on over the next couple of weeks, right? So if Fulham had taken it easy, the weird thing is that I actually think that Fulham did sort of stroke the ball around, did kind of play things in second gear, and still were just this much better than Reading, which is a good sign. Reading were bad though, like really quite poor. You know, from the moment where Laurent passes it across his own box to gift Harry Wilson the opener, and yes, he's playing out of position. Yes, he's dropped back in to centre back because Scott Dan goes offshore. There's mitigating circumstances if you're a Reading fan, I'm sure. But ultimately, from that moment, it was like Fulham aren't going to lose this game. This is a Reading side depleted of confidence, who are shot, who want their manager out in terms of the kind of vote around the ground, who are furious with their chairman. The whole, you know, vibe around the club is just one big negative at the moment from what kind of we're hearing, what we're reading. So therefore, the moment that they gave away a stupid goal to let Fulham into the lead, you kind of look at it and go, well, that's probably that, isn't it? And ultimately, yes, perhaps a little bit lucky. I don't think it's quite a stonewall as Coops was saying there. I didn't think it was quite like that. I didn't think Wilson's one was either. They were both, probably on the edge of penalties for me. But if neither of them had given or both of them had been given, I don't think anyone would have had too many complaints. It was what it was. And ultimately, as soon as Fulham cruised into that lead, started, you know, stroking the ball around in the second half, just too good for them. And that is what it came down to. And you can look at that and go, after five or six, it was kind of, let's try and poke holes in this. And suddenly they're chasing, trying to counter, trying to find breaks, and they're leaving themselves exposed. And it was a little bit like what happened to Blackburn, right? You know, sometimes at 3-4-0 down, what you're supposed to do, or what you're told you're supposed to do, is shut up shop. Right. Just, you know, Blackburn had 10 men, so it's a little bit different, but shut up shop, tuck in. Fulham were just too good. And even when Reading tried to do that, even at half pace, Fulham were finding gaps. And that's a good sign going forwards.
Yeah, Peter, I actually had a feeling at halftime that the floodgates might open here, because you got the sense from everything that's happened in the last 6 weeks, not being able to play matches, and then the five games before that where we drew a load of games and then lost to Sheffield United, that Fulham had a point to prove last night, to themselves maybe, and not really to the rest of the league. I'm assuming they don't really care what anyone else thinks, but I think there was a point to prove internally that we are still the top dogs in this division. We still are the team to fear, and maybe a little bit of that element of fear of playing Fulham had gone out the window because teams had started to get positive results against us. And from that point of view, if Fulham are a confidence team, and we seem to be one this year, we seem to win in streaks, then I'm hoping, and I'm not counting on it, but I'm hoping this is the start of another run.
Yeah, I mean, well, after the Blackburn game, the run wasn't great after that point, was it? I think that'll be interesting to see just how Fulham kick on from here. I think it was 10 points from 21 available after the game. So, for sure, I mean, for sure in the sense of coming after the recent run. And I think you're right. I think we kind of got a sense of the frustration and of one, not being able to play during this period, especially when it's not your own fault with these postponements. But then also just not being able to rectify a defeat, you know, rectify what had been an unbeaten run. It had been 11 games unbeaten. Yes, it was four draws, but you're still unbeaten. Suddenly that being transformed into five without a win. And you got that sense from, I think, Harry Wilson's comments afterwards to the Fulham channels and Kenny Tetter as well. And unfortunately for Reading, they were on the receiving end of that. I do agree with what Jack was saying about the troubles at the Medeski, the Select Car Leasing.
Rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
Seven cars a leasing.
Oh yeah, that would
have
been good.
There's a three-word review that would have been good.
That would have been good. But yeah, I mean, they've got some real issues there. Obviously, they came off the back of that defeat to Kidderminster, non-league Kidderminster at the weekend. I think they had some absences. Obviously, they were hit by a COVID outbreak themselves, so I'm sure there are some mitigating factors there. But when it really was, you know, waving the white flag time here, we're really not that bothered. Even in that first half, and I can see where you're coming from, Sammy, about potentially seeing the floodgates opening. It was peculiar in the way they dealt with Fulham. They didn't really press. They didn't really have a solid block. You know, there were moments where Fulham were really, I wouldn't say anywhere near second, third gear at times, and then suddenly they're just picking the ball up in the Reading 18-yard box. You know, Carvalho did it a couple of times. Wilson drifted in behind a few times in really dangerous positions. And you know, we saw Andy Carroll's quality, and I genuinely thought he was unplayable at times in that first half. It was very odd. But I think, you know, that after that point, once the goals go in, once the second goes in from the penalty, which, you know, I thought it was a penalty on first viewing, and at that point, you know, Reading just sort of folded. And when you have all of those circumstances, then you have the opportunity to put a team to the sword, and Fulham are making a habit of that.
So go on then, George. What was your favourite out of the seven? We probably haven't got time to go through all seven goals in detail, so maybe pick out one or two that particularly got the... got the heart racing, because I mean that second half where when we were in that end and the goals were just flying in, and we were losing track. It was just so fun. There was about 20 minutes, which was just one of the most fun I've had at a football match. Just 3,000 Fulham fans behind that goal, and just like goal after goal after goal, and knowing that the seven was possible, and it felt inevitable. But yeah. Pick out a couple of highlights from the goals. I assume they're probably going to be from the second half.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so much fun. It's games and evenings like that that keep you going back to away days time and time again. But to pick two, and it's like trying to choose your favourite children, it feels like. But the Tete's goal, where Mitrovic is completely unmarked on the edge of the area. What on earth the Reading defence are thinking, leaving him lurking around the edge of the area. And then he just absolutely recoils his neck like a jackhammer and just fires the header in, and then Tete just gets one on. It's just lovely to see him get his first goal, and you can see how chuffed and pleased he was, and I guess like somewhat unexpected. I don't know. Yeah, it's almost as if he wasn't expecting the ball to be fired in like that. It felt like it could have been a worked training ground move, but also had a bit of luck just from the look on Tete's face. It was like he wasn't expecting it. And then I loved the goal that Munoz set up for Mitrovic when it's a bit of argy-bargy with Holmes, and there was a bit of back and forth going there, to then absolutely dispatch him with a quite beautiful kind of Cruyff turn, and then, you know, use his pace and strength and get the shot on to then set up Mitrovic. I particularly enjoyed the celebrations between the two of them as well. You can tell this blossoming bromance that these two strikers have. I mean, I've said it before, but what a fantastic role model for Muniz to have. And it's great that, you know, he's learning from Mitrovic, but it was a special moment. So my two goals, to summarise, my favourite ones were Tete's and the seventh. Because we were just whipped up into a kind of giddy hysteria by that point. So yeah, those are my favourite.
I mean, Tete's goal now means that of the 16 outfield players who have played more than 10 times this season for Fulham, only Harrison Reed and John Mikel Seri are yet to score, which is quite surprising when you look at the whole team now. The entire kind of regular back four or five that have played the most this season have all scored. That includes Dennis Adoy. Joe Bryan hasn't made 10 appearances yet, but wouldn't put a goal past him at some point this season either.
who would be, if we were to have a little wager between the four of us, who would your money on be to break their duck before? Because Seri's got it in him. We've seen him with that rifle against Burnley that he got in his first season. He did hit the
comma of post and bar the other week as well, didn't he? In the Derby game.
I'm starting to resign myself to the fact that Harrison Reece is never going to score for us.
He's building up his shot tally per game though, isn't he? He had a couple yesterday and there was one from distance in the second half that from the way I was sitting, it was flat on, so I couldn't see behind the goal, but it just looked like it was going to drift in and I thought, oh, is this going to be his moment? But...
Yeah, Southwood save. It was a half decent save from Southwood actually off Harrison Reed. Harrison Reed also had quite a good opportunity, I felt like, in the Bristol City match where it fell for him quite plumb. I mean, he was still from the edge of the box. He would have taken a good strike, but he kind of pulled it. I feel like Harrison Reed's working up to a goal. And Seri feels a bit like Kearney, where actually I don't think he cares that much if he scores or not. I think he's more than happy just pulling the strings and
he will score assists. Though. He'll just unleash one at some point. I bet you he scores like a free kick. Yeah. I bet it's just someone just gives him a free kick at some point and he just
I can see Seri scoring a corner.
Correct.
Yeah.
it's called an Olympic goal. Two of them happened in the same weekend earlier in the season in Italy and Spain. How about that?
Do you think it would get to the point, Peter, end of the season, get a penalty, give Rodak the pen?
Oh, maybe. But I guess it depends what Mitrovic is doing in the scoring charts, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, if he's on for 40.
Yeah, if he's on for some big numbers, he's not going to pass them up. So
no, he's not. Jack, let's talk about Harry Wilson.
Yes.
5 goal involvements.
Yeah.
I mean, that's insane.
Five. Jeremy.
2 goals, 3 assists, nearly a 4th assist in the way that he was his corner that eventually flicked to Tete. And Mitrovic's header might have been going in if it wasn't for Tete, or it was close anyway. So it could have nearly been 6. It was only the last goal that Wilson, you definitely could say, wasn't involved in.
Yeah.
And this is a player that, look, has been in and out of kind of popularity this season in terms of what he's been able to do. He's had bright moments. He's also had games where it's kind of drifted past him. Last night definitely wasn't one of them. He looked absolutely terrific. I'd love to know some stats. There can't be many players that have ever had 5 goal involvements.
Harry Kane had one last year against Southampton, didn't he? Where he got 4 assists and a goal. I mean, look, he was excellent last night, and yet he still probably should have had 2 more. Which sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? Like, that sounds absolutely nuts that we're having that conversation. But he misses one where he goes through one-on-one and he sort of tries to dink the keeper and it ends up with Niskins trying to get to it back post. He probably should score there. And there's another one in the second half that kind of falls to him and you go, oh, he's going to hit this, and he doesn't. So obviously I'm not criticising. I just meant to make that clear. You don't get criticised if you get 5 goal involvements in a game. He was excellent. He was really, really good. And look, you kind of... you look at it and you think, how good can he be? And the truth is, when he's on song and when the things are feeding him and he gets the right, you know, he gets that early moment of confidence, as we saw with the goal, right? Where he's just able to slot one home and then suddenly he is a live wire. He is everywhere. But that combination play that we're seeing and, you know, down that right hand side, I think he's enjoyed having Tete back alongside him last night. It looked like it, you know, to having those overlapping runs, being able to get back inside onto his, you know, favoured left foot. All of it felt like everything kind of fell into place for Harry Wilson. Now, he needs to obviously go and show that against higher quality opposition than what we had last night, because Reading's defensive output was quite frankly atrocious. But, I mean, it's a great way to get yourself back into form, and you can have no qualms with that. That's a 10 out of 10 performance. And I just want to give a shout out, and we talked about the goal, right, the Tete goal, but that corner is absolutely perfectly placed. It is training ground textbook, you know, being able to ping it the way that he does, where it basically stays flat onto Mitrovic's head, running on the edge of the area. That is a sensational ball, like an absolute worldie.
To be fair, the Tosin one's not bad either, is it?
No.
I mean, we talked about how good Fulham are from set plays, and with Seri and with Wilson and Cabano as well. And I guess if there was any mild concern that losing Seri would affect set plays, that was absolutely dismissed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Last 100%. Night, the goal I really liked was the third one, and it was one that Silva picked out as well, just because of the way Fulham built us up and how we saw Anthony Robinson hit the byline and get a cross in. And I was sort of going into that game, and particularly in the first half as well, just watching how Tete and Robinson did, you know, it's the one area of the team you feel like you want more goal involvements. Now, we've talked on here before about how they are creative and they are creating chances in games, which means, you know, their passes are leading to shots, which is important. But they haven't really had the same like goal involvement, same number of goals. Before last night's game, Tatian Robinson, who you'd probably call the first choice pair for fullbacks now, they've only managed 4 goal involvements together between them, which from 51 goals, and particularly in a silver team as well, doesn't feel like a lot. You know, looking back at when we first started talking about the type of team silver builds, whether it was Everton or going back to Olympiacos or Estoril, his fullbacks are really important in terms of giving width, but also like affecting the final third. And it was that third goal was one of the only times we've really seen it for a little while anyway, where Robinson has hit the byline. And we saw it a little bit more. It was almost like they were trying to do it. And part of me wondered maybe it was the size of the pitch, because it did seem like quite a large pitch last night, which allowed them to have that width. But it's that one area that Fulham really need to use frequently, because the amount of times they come up against sides that sit deep. And you just wonder if that could be maybe a confidence boost. I think Robinson again had sort of an indifferent game. I think in the first half there were errors, and obviously there was that really poor moment where he doesn't clear and Kamara does the back heel and Rodak has to pull off a worldy save to keep the game, to keep Fulham ahead. But he can get forward, he can get into those spaces, and it's if Fulham can do that, with both fullbacks doing that on either side, it can become overwhelming for teams. And in that second half, it happened, and I think that third goal really just deflated Reading.
Yeah, I think after that, you knew it was curtains, and I was hopeful of a second half kind of mauling, and I really thought there was a possibility. The third goal was just, you knew after then that Reading were going to collapse, and that is exactly what happened. But yeah, I'm glad you remember that Rodak save, actually, because it's easy to forget when you win 7-0, kind of little moments like that. I mean, it was terrible from Robinson. It really was. But it's a wonderful save from Marek Rodak. And I guess in a team that's going to win 7-0 quite often, the goalkeeper probably isn't going to get the praise that maybe he's due. But he certainly, you know, kept the game going, really, because as we mentioned from lots of the incidents that happened, if that goes to 1-1, that becomes a much more difficult game. I still think Fulham go on to win, but not in the style and the swagger that we did. Right, we're going to take a break there. We could talk about Fulham scoring 7 goals forever, but we've got lots to get onto. And afterwards, we're going to look ahead to Saturday against Bristol City. This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists to any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish. Welcome to part 2 of the Fulhamish podcast. Sammy James here with Peter Rutzler.
Hello.
Jack Collins.
Hello, listeners.
And George Cooper.
Hello.
Plenty of good stuff on The Athletic. You can get 33% off the annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/Fulham Pod. There is, of course, Peter's take on everything that happened on Tuesday night against Reading and all the antics, and Fulham very much getting back to form in the most impressive way possible. But also today, Peter, there's a piece on Adam Stansfield, which is Jay Stansfield's dad, and the Adam Stansfield Foundation. Very important work that's being done there, and I really enjoyed reading this piece.
Yeah, I sat down and spoke with some of Jay's family, and Adam's parents. For those of you who don't know, that Adam Stansfield passed away in 2010 from bowel cancer while he was still playing for Exeter City. And after his death, his family set up the Adam Stansfield Foundation, which you can find on Twitter. They're always tweeting about the auctions they're doing to raise money. And they talked about how they are now, you know, helping so many different young people to get involved in football. And it talks about, know, Adam's story and how he made such a strong impact on so many people that he met in the southwest of England. And now, as part of his legacy, really, the fact the family are now trying to take that on and help as many young people as they can in all different ways. It's really important work that they're doing. And it's also a bit of background to Jay and Jay's story. Obviously, we've seen a lot of Jay now. He's been training with the first team all the time. And he is also a form of Adam's legacy as well on the field. So it was a real privilege to sit down with his family and to talk about Adam in particular and the work they're doing. So, yeah, would recommend a read.
Yeah, definitely. And as you say, loads of great stuff from Peter on The Athletic in the past few weeks. Always worth a subscribe. Let's look ahead then to Bristol City on Saturday. It's good that we had the Reading match in between. Otherwise, it would have been consecutive games against the Robins and nothing against them. But variety is the spice of life. But it's going to be a very different game to the Bristol City match that we had 7 days previous, which is Fulham's narrow 1-0 win in the FA Cup. Jack, Bristol City are Fulham's bogey team. We do not do very well against Bristol City at Craven Cottage, it must be pointed out. They have a phenomenal record at Craven Cottage. It'd be a nice time to finally break the hoodoo.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. It's something that has stuck with us through good and through bad, which I suppose we can say we're consistent, if nothing else. It goes back, I suppose, a couple of years, but it stands out to me that game where Tammy Abraham scored twice in a 4-1 at the Cottage, where we felt like we were really outplayed and they felt like a really good side. At that point, Bristol City were a good side, right? And they were just off the playoffs that year, if I'm not mistaken. They fell away a little bit. But ultimately, they have regressed since then and have kind of fallen back into championship obscurity. And yet Fulham seem to have this problem every time they come to Craven Cottage. So yeah, a nice time to end it, I would argue. And I think it would be a good time. Often it feels like this is a game that's on a weeknight. I don't know if that's just me, but it's a game that stands out as being a weeknight, you know, an evening game in midweek a lot. So it's quite nice to have it 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
Yeah, the run against Bristol City at Craven Cottage is mildly astonishing. I wouldn't exactly say it's the most incredible run that's ever been formulated, but they have won every game at Craven Cottage since 1997, including 5 in a row. One of those in the League Cup and then 4 in the Championship in the 4 seasons that we've been down in the Championship since getting relegated from the Premier League the first time. So, yeah, it's a very interesting little run we have against them. And Peter, they were good in the FA Cup on Saturday. Like, they probably on balance deserve to win that match. Yes, it was a very different Fulham lineup, and particularly with the confidence that we might have got from this Reading game, I think that we will be clear favourites to win this, but they weren't any pushovers in the game at Ashton Gate. They weren't real pushovers in the FA Cup, despite us getting the win. So I'm not expecting an easy game here.
No, I think Bristol City deserve to win the FA Cup game. It's going to be a very different game on Saturday, though. And I think, obviously, the main difference is the lineup that Fulham will play. I think even in the Cup game, you saw the impact that the subs made, you know, introducing Alexander Mitrovic, introducing Harry Wilson, introducing Mason Scribano, Tom Kearney. And they really did actually flip the game, because I thought Fulham were pretty average for the most part. They did look extremely rusty, which we thought would happen after the long break without competitive games. But I think when you add in the fact that, you know, there were 9 changes to the league game, a team that were pretty unfamiliar in a competitive environment with each other, maybe you could see why that happened. But once you started getting those players who are used to the rhythms of playing, the flows of playing, it just changed. The game changed very, very quickly. And in extra time, which was the only time really that Fulham were the better team, I'd say, they did enough. They had the edge and they did enough. But, you know, Bristol City do have some good players. As Jack was saying, they've regressed a little bit into the sort of the championship middle era, middle class. And they've had to change things, you know, financially. That comes with when you get close to a promotion push and you're not blessed with parachute payments. They've sort of had to redo things a little bit. It's a little bit tighter on the budgets, and they're relying again on their academy. And obviously Fulham know how good their academy can be with Joe Bryan and Bobby Decadova-Reed. And we saw a couple of those last Saturday as well. thought Alex Scott was very good. Cameron Pring, I think, the other one, did quite well as well. So, you know, there is a reset there. They are trying to go again. Obviously, last season was really poor for them. But, you know, there is talent. And the one I'm thinking of in particular is Han Noah Masengo in the middle, who was superb against Fulham. I know he's attracted a lot of attention from bigger clubs as well. He was signed from Monaco as well. He was playing in the Champions League and then, you know, suddenly ends up at Bristol City. But there are threats in that team, as you say, Sammy. And I think the performance that they gave shows that they can be good. Nigel Pearson set up with that 3-4-1-2. Clearly, you know, he saw how effective it was when they switched to it in the reverse league fixture earlier in the season. You know, that changed the game that day as well. So I expect to see that again. I expect to see that pose the same problems that we've talked about all season long. And it'll be up to Fulham to try and deal with that.
Nice for Bristol fans to get on the road. 7 of their last 9 matches have been Ashton Gate for Bristol City.
The home record's been abysmal as well, hasn't it?
So I imagine they'll be quite relieved to finally get out of Bristol. George, for Fulham, is it the case of you can't change a team that's just won 7-0? But then again, Marcus Silva does have fixtures to think about. Is there any area that you'd potentially look at changing? I also, as a side point from part one, I thought Chalobah was good when he came on. So that is an option that Fulham have if we did want to switch things up in the middle. But surely we stay the same.
I think so, yeah. I'd be very surprised if there were any changes coming in. You just can't make it. It was a solid performance all round. The very few errors other than, you know, Robinson's. But, you know, I would go the same lineup, try and keep that momentum and move forward from here. It does seem to be like one of those games that's destined to be a 0-0 draw after like coming off the back of a 7-0 drubbing. But no, I'm very much looking forward to it. And hopefully we can break the run of bad results against Bristol at home. But I mean, yeah, as Peter and Jack said, they're a very, very well organised side with Nigel Pearson. And I don't think it'll be easy. It'll be a lot tougher than yesterday's match, that's for sure.
Yeah, and they are unbelievably inconsistent. You'd only just have to look at their results this season, and it's full of W's and L's and D's all over the place.
One thing I would say on lineup, I'd be interested to see if Tom Kearney plays. I know it seems a bit daft when he plays so well, and as George was saying, you know, you don't change a winning team, and maybe they won't. But it was just interesting when I asked Silva before the game about what he would do. And whether Tom Kearney could, you know, come into the team now and play an important role. Because we've talked about how Kearney and Seri are sort of similar in terms of profile, in terms of how they play, in terms of, you know, their dynamism and how they like to dictate the tempo of the game. And we saw Kearney do that superbly on Tuesday night. But his response to that wasn't necessarily to do with whether he could come in for Seri or anything like that. It was more to do with whether he can play 90 minutes after 90 minutes. And he talked about how he sometimes have to manage that a little bit in training. So I'll be curious to see whether TC can do that over this period, because it will give us a sense of how he's sort of come back from that knee injury. And of course, he hasn't had that consistency yet. It's been a long time since he's been able to play game after game after game. So it'd be interesting to see what he does there. But I mean, yeah, sorry. I mean, I can't see the team changing. I'm not advocating that TC be changed. I'm just curious to see.
No, I'd be interested to know, though, what Fulham would do if we didn't have TC, because you don't have Seri. So who would you play in that role? Can Chalobah fill that role?
It'd be a different game, wouldn't it? I think if Chalobah comes in, he's a different, completely different profile. You would assume Bobby. But then it would be you're relying on Fabio to take a more central role. And Fabio Carvalho, we haven't really seen the best of him for a little bit. Not since he's been out. He hasn't had the same spark since the start of the season. And obviously, you know, that naturally leads to swirling talk and speculation about whether everything around him is affecting him and blah, blah, blah. He hasn't been poor. I thought it was pretty good on Tuesday night, but he hasn't had that same, you know, I'm thinking of the Millwall game. The Millwall game for me was the night that he really announced himself in an emphatic way. So, I mean, maybe there's an opportunity there for him. But I think, again, like maybe Kearney, in a sense, getting a run of games helps, and that's probably what he's getting at the moment.
Just doesn't seem to be falling for Fabio. I don't think it's anything particularly wrong with his performances, and there's lots of players that just go through little gluts, and as an FPL player, I keep noticing at the moment that Bernardo Silva doesn't seem to ever score goals or get assists, but he's absolutely pivotal to what Manchester City are doing right now. But yeah, it's one goal since August for Fabio. And I mean, yes, a lot of missed games, but it just doesn't seem to be, which I'm not overly concerned about. Just one of those things.
I mean, that is an interesting point. I mean, obviously with Bernardo Silva, you probably associate that with De Bruyne's return, and that's sort of changed his sort of role in the team a little bit. And I wonder with Fabio if his role slightly changed a little bit, maybe in terms of how he's able to impact the games in the same way in those advanced areas. And maybe it would take a Kearney to drop out for a little bit for him to do that again. But, you know, as you say, he's not playing badly. I don't think that's not the point. I guess it's just having those, you know, goal returns, goal involvements. And maybe it's similar to Wilson as well. You know, we talked about Wilson having those moments. So
I don't know if that's something that's just an eye test and wouldn't be brought up by the stats, but he feels a bit like he's just playing in a slightly more, you know, kind of deeper role. Not necessarily on purpose. He just feels like he's picking the ball up further from goal and not necessarily facing the goal. You know, when we were looking at him in those games where he was absolutely electric against Millwall and around that area in August, he was picking the ball a lot up and driving with it. And I still think he's maybe the only player we have that does that. But he seems to be picking it up in a far more kind of midfieldy area than kind of charging at the edge of the 18-yard box, which is where he was so effective scoring goals and getting in goal involvement. So perhaps it's just a little bit of a subtle change in how he's approaching games. And maybe, you know, with TC in there as well, I know obviously this hasn't been a regular thing, but TC there last night, just able to kind of drop a little bit and let TC thread a little bit more out towards the wide players. It just keeps Carvalho a little bit more withdrawn. Just something I kind of picked up from watching him, but maybe it's just a slight tactical tweak in where we're at.
Okay, right, we're going to take a break there, and then we've got some time for your emails.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live. Only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Part three of the Fulhamish podcast, Sammy James with George, Jack and Peter. Let's do some emails as ever. hello@fulhamish.co.uk if you want to get in touch. We try and read as many of them as come through. It's a very busy inbox, but we do try and read and select as many of them as we can. Hello, first of all, to Matt Wall, who says, "Hi, fellas, big fan of the pod and looking forward to tonight's discussion. One of the most enjoyable aspects of this season has been how goal-crazed we've become. After last year's drought, which brought 27 goals and cautious football, we are gorging ourselves. Whilst automatic promotion remains the only priority, we also find ourselves in a race to be Europe's top scorers. We have 58 goals from 24 games. That's about the same pace as Manchester City, which is 53 from 21, Liverpool, 52 from 20, and Inter, 51 from 20. Our other two big threats for the European team golden boot are Bayern, who have 57 goals from 20, and Benfica, who have 49 from 17. What's clear is that Fulham supporters are being given more entertainment this year than almost every team across the continent. Here's hoping we can keep this up and being in the same company come the end of the season. And then a footnote, he says, Parker's championship team went up with 64 from the whole season. Cheers and come on, you whites, Matt. So thank you for doing some stats for us. I feel a little uncomfortable comparing us to top tier sides. I don't know if there are other second division teams that are probably also running away with their leagues, but I'm all, I can't complain at all. It is just an astonishing time to support Fulham. And there's some comparisons. We got one from Carl Kent saying, you know, at what point do we start really comparing this to the 2000-2001 season?
And if that point is if we win the league. Like, it's as simple as that.
No, but what about the enjoyment of that season? Like, yes, okay, we could finish third, and that, I guess, would taint it a lot.
You mean, I guess? It would. You know, it's all well and good and having all the fun and games, but if you collapse, you can't then compare this season to that one. We have to win the league if you're going to put these.
But you
two
can't just say, I reserve my opinion on whether I'm enjoying myself until we've got the trophy.
Enjoy yourself loads. Just hold on the comparison to afterwards, I think. No, you can still enjoy yourself without having. I don't come out of games after we've won 5-1 at home thinking, I wonder how the Tigana team would have done at that point. I was like, that was good, wasn't it? Like, it doesn't need to be a direct comparison at this point in order to enjoy yourself.
So the question is this, do we think that this Fulham team has the potential to be, you know, confined? Put into the history books as one of the greatest ever.
Yes, yeah, 100%.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't remember having this much fun since the 23 undefeated run in 2017-2018. And this is why you need to be getting to games at the moment, because we may not see another team like this for quite some time. We need to savour every minute. And if you can get to matches, get to matches. If you put off by a
February
is away.
February is a bit of a bastard though for
exactly the midweek and Middlesbrough.
I mean, you've got the midweek and Middlesbrough, you've got a trip to Hull, you've got a trip to Cardiff, and you've got a trip to Manchester City. Yeah, it's definitely a few trips that aren't for the faint-hearted there, and no doubt I think all of us will struggle to make all of them. Peter,
on course for a full house in February.
Good man. Just a quick one on Jack's point. I do totally see Jack's point in that you can't really draw those comparisons unless to the, you know, 2000-2001 team, unless we win the league. But also another point that, sorry to be bring us back down to earth, but it feels like the championship this year is particularly poor, and there's a lot of things that are going in our favour in terms of the squad that we've managed to retain and the financial input that we've had, that, you know, I'm absolutely over the moon how things are going. I think we're doing brilliantly. However, there are a lot of other things that are going in our favour, which maybe might muddy the waters a bit when making that comparison.
That stuff does tend to fade into obscurity, though. If you're looking back at the team, I mean, we obviously look back at that season, and mostly I can only remember it because I had a VHS. Actually, I had a DVD of it. I think might be one of the first DVDs.
One of the early DVDs.
Yeah, of that season, I used to watch it loads. So that's why, you know, my memories from that come from rewatching it rather than being there. But I don't think we're looking at that being like, oh, I wonder how strong the first division was at that point. I think in 10 years' time, if we're looking back at this season, if we go on and do win the league, and touch wood, and we all hope that those things happen, you know, then I think we will look back at this team and think, yeah, they were exceptionally special. I don't think that would be my only take on that. I think, you know, the kind of caveats around the league and all are probably that. And Fulham had a very, very strong team in 2001. It's worth remembering that, you know, that there was a lot of very, very high quality talent brought in to a division below. And you look at, you know, obviously when Chris Coleman was brought in, he was the record transfer into, that was when we were in Division Two, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know, there was a lot of basically Fulham of kind of superpowered, a supercharged their charge up the leagues. And so I'd imagine there would have been a similar kind of caveat of what was going on then. It probably just weren't as exposed to it because we were so young.
Right, couple more serious questions before this will catch on. It's looming on the horizon. Jack, I'll go to you on this one. And Peter, you might have something to say about it as well. It's a transfers one. It says, loving the podcast as usual. I have a question regarding transfers. I'm hearing that the club are worried about an offer for Mitrovic might be too good to turn down. We've kind of discussed the Mitrovic transfer a little bit. But he says, if that did happen, happen, should Fulham put in an offer for Andrea Belotti? He's a free agent in the summer and a similar striker. Do you think he would come? He also talks about Sander Berge being a player that he'd like. Also, he wondered who would be a replacement for Tosin if a large offer came in for him. Says he knows it's silly season, but he thought he'd just get your opinions. And you guys know a bit more about European football than me.
I like Belotti, but do I think he would come? Probably not. No.
Even in the Prem?
Maybe it might, you know, take a chance and want a chance himself in the summer. Maybe. I don't think he'd join if there was a big offer in January. But, you know, from what I'm hearing, that potential offer that looked like it was going to come in appears to have died down in terms of interest from the continent. So that's good news from what I've been told, at the very least. But yeah, no, I mean, I like Belotti. Maybe in the summer, it would be an interesting bit of business. Obviously, you have to work quite hard if you're going to replace an Alexander Mitrovic, because what he brings to this side, you'd maybe look at bringing in someone who had a little bit more, it was a little bit more mobile. If you were going to do that, I'd maybe look at trying to pinch someone off the Italian teams that was maybe a Raspadori, who's a little bit smaller and less kind of physical, but has a little bit more mobile, or you go full out for someone like a Gianluigi Scamacca, who has been absolutely ridiculous for Sassuolo this year, and is on, looks like he's on the verge of a big move. You might be able to pinch in there before he really hits the headlines. Aside from that, the player I would actually go for, and the player I would look to sign if we did lose Mitrovic, is Arthur Cabral from Basel, who has been in absolutely ludicrous form across both the Swiss Super League and the Europa Conference League, and got his first Brazil call up, if I'm not mistaken, in October. Didn't play, but made the squad for the first time. That's the kind of player I think Fulham could probably get involved with. I think 20, 25 million would bring him out of Basel. And I think he's on the up. So that's who I would replace Mitrovic with if things went absolutely Pete Tong. Although I think the ideal situation for everyone is just keep Alexander Mitrovic.
Yeah, Peter, has there been much more on, it seemed like there was those kind of grumblings at the start of January of like Mitrovic to Juventus, and then we'll get Berrettin Diaz, and that seems to have all calmed down a little bit, but that might just be because we're mid-January now and kind of like the beginning of January rush is gone and now everyone's just waiting for the 31st.
I wouldn't bet against a big team coming in for Mitrovic. Anyone, and we talked about this before in terms of his form. I mean, if you're scoring the goals he is, you know, that's desirable. And in terms of a league, you'd probably say Serie A might suit him quite nicely. But for me, in terms of rumours this month, it's always felt a bit more like leverage. Leverage for other players. He's quite a good one to have in the public domain to use as deflection for other targets as well. Because in terms of where Mitrovic is at the moment, I can't see him moving. Unless something ridiculous comes in. When we say ridiculous, I mean really ridiculous, and even then it would probably be in the summer. So not really one. But you mentioned Tosin there, which I think is a really interesting point. I think I mentioned it in a piece after Bristol City that, you know, there's been some talk about looking at centre half. We've talked about how longer term it may be a position that needs to be looked at. Obviously at the moment depth is good, especially for the Championship with Mawson, Hector, Ream and Tosin, but with Ream's age and whatever, it's definitely one that I think is on the Fulham radar. I don't think that means something would happen this month, but even without Tosin necessarily moving on, I think it's something that will have to be considered. And because Tosin's going to attract interest, but we had a really good game again against Reading. But yeah, for now, nothing shocking to really.
Okay, one more before this will catch on. And this was a really sad but lovely email from Graham. So thank you so much for getting in touch. He says, love the pod, been listening since the start of the season. Very difficult time for me personally with my wife Linda and fellow Fulham fan at the end of her life with frontal temporal dementia at 56. You don't know how much the stuff that you do and others like you do helps people like me through the worst of times. He suggests a chance, which is we've got Marco Silva, as in the Guardiola one. Graham, it is already a chance, so you can't have that one for this will catch on, but it is a good one, so at least you were on the right wavelength. Anyway, he says, great result tonight. Picks me up massively after my time in the nursing home today, which is full of sadness and upset, but also always restores my faith in the human race. The staff are just amazing. If you can give a shout out to all working in nursing and residential care homes, and particularly Woodside Nursing Home in Slipend near Luton, that would be wonderful. Keep up the good work. And that is from Graham. Graham, wishing you and Linda all the best. Sounds like an awful time. but we appreciate you listening nonetheless. And I'm glad that it gives you some happiness, as does Fulham winning 7-0. That's enough to give anyone a little bit of joy in their lives in this very, very difficult time. Right, this will catch on time. You've been sending in your chants. We rate them or slate them. The first one is from Danny. He says, this one is very simple, but it's a doozy. Mitrovic to the tune of Baby Shark. Which is
no stay out of my head, get behind me Satan,
which is just Mitrovic Mitrovic. It's not catching on.
No,
it's very catchy, but it's not catching on. The only thing it's going to catch on is in people's heads now.
No, it's a naught for bringing Baby Shark back into the public domain. Danny, fuming.
We've already got two quality Mitrovic chants anyway, so
yeah. No, I mean, there is no market left for Mitrovic chants, particularly to Baby Shark. But Danny, thank you for getting in touch. This is another Mitro chant. I do quite like this. It's not catching on, but I do quite like it. This one's from Jack Copeland. He says, hey guys, so this one is a bit of old school, new school mashup to Johnny Cash's Ring of Fire, introducing a Fulham stalwart chant from back in the day with Mitro being on fire. And the chant is, we're going up because Mitro is on fire. He scores, 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 and the flames go higher. And now he burns, burns, burns. Mitro's on fire. Mitro's on fire.
Really good. That's good.
Big fan. And it's got another, I love the chants that have a section that doesn't have any lyrics to it that people can just go like, do you remember the Scotty Malone one too?
Yeah.
Supertramp, where you just go da 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 and everyone goes nuts, those points in the air. You could do that to the Ring of Fire.
Is
by
it,
Johnny
Cash, is it bad that I've always associated that chant with Scooter rather than Supertramp?
Yeah.
I'm with you on that one, Jack.
It's obviously both, but like, yeah.
That's your
because,
default.
No, but because that bit doesn't exist in the original. That bit only exists in the Scooter rework.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, it does. There's not like... it's not given the same airtime. Yeah, absolutely.
As like an instrumental?
Yeah.
It's the same melody, but...
Of course.
Yeah, all right. So you argue that the Scotty Malone was to Scooter's
It was
version,
100%. Right? If I was playing like a music thing for Fulham fans and they were like, put the tune from the Scotty Malone song on, I would have put the Scooter version of the Logical song on.
Yeah, you'd be giving half a point if for anything otherwise for the Superchamp original.
This one is again from Matt Wall. So he was the person that gave us all those stats on Fulham's goal scoring. He also put in a PS, which was a chant for This Will Catch On. And I didn't want to give... look, Matt's being greedy here with two things, but it was a good chant. So I felt like it was worthy.
Also, one of them was doing our work for us. So to be fair, like that's a plus. That goes in the plus box, not the minus box.
Matt says, this is one of those tunes that everyone knows without knowing they know it. The key is not to be too tuneful. I've included the original lyrics below for guidance. It's If You Like Pina Coladas for Neeskin's Cabano.
By Rupert Holmes.
Yeah. So it's, yes, we've got Neeskin's Cabano skinning you down the wing. He plays for us and the Congo. He joined us from Genk. Laying goals up for Mitro on the banks of the Thames. He will score from a free kick. We love you, Neeskins, our friend.
Yeah, that's excellent.
I love it. Work out job.
You're not doing that justice. That's quality. That's really good.
I enjoyed that one a lot.
That's right, excellent. That's an 8, maybe an 8.5. That's quality.
We have two more, and both of these have recordings. So one of them is from last night and some people that George and I met on the 50 bus back from Reading to the ground. We were all a little bit giddy at the time.
lovely bunch of lads. They were so funny.
Now, I don't have all of their names, but I only have one of their names. But his name was Andrew Lappin. Now, first of all, Andrew was lapping it up. No pun intended. Because he claims he created the chant last night, which was Manchester City, we're coming for you. Which
I don't think he's created that.
No. But apparently he says he started Manchester City, we're coming for you, which was a good chant last night. It was a funny moment. It got picked up by quite a lot of outlets that we were singing that last night, which was enjoyable. So if true, well done, Andrew, for that. But they also came up with this absolute doozy of a chant, which we were singing on the bus. And this is a recording from the bus last night. It's to ABBA's Super Trooper. Now, there are not many chants to Super Trooper, and I very much enjoyed this one. So here's a ropey recording from the bus.
Harry Wilson, Mitchell and his Smith, playing black and white, scoring goals all night, making Championship looks like.
Very good.
That was me screaming and again.
Oh, well done. You really were a bit giddy.
What are the lyrics to that, George?
It goes... Harry Wilson, Mitrovic and Niskins, playing black and white, scoring goals all night, make the Championship look shite.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's very good. It was very catchy. And so I guess the fact that it did catch on the bus has to be at least a 9 out of 10. In fact, I'm almost going to say 10.
Public, yeah, it's up there, isn't it? It's up
because
there.
It has caught on. ABBA Super Troopers original. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I'm in. Sold.
Maybe it's a 9 because it's difficult and maybe it would be struggling.
No, that's good.
On.
I think that's good. I think that's it's not that difficult. It's not that tricky. It's not that long. People will like that. I think that's good. It's okay. A 10 from me.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Final one from Liam White, who says, long-time listener based in Washington, D.C., who lived near Fulham in the McBride era. Thank you for all you do, bringing the global Fulham family together. Been loving the This Will Catch On segment of the pod. Given the lack of variety in American sports chants, my intuition of knowing what type of songs make for great English football chant adaptations is still developing. Nevertheless, I wanted to workshop one, I love that, that pays tribute to fellow Fulham fan Sam Smith. Is that a thing?
Yeah, Sam Smith's a Fulham fan.
Is he?
Oh, didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh. Sam Smith doesn't support Fulham these days? I feel like everyone's got some kind of loose connection, including him and Pope John Paul II.
No, Pope John Paul II was a Fulham fan, like absolutely quality bloke. there's two separate issues there, but that's true. Sam Smith has been to a Fulham game or numerous. No, this is a proper one. He is actually a Fulham fan.
Okay, right. Well, anyway, he says he wants to workshop one that pays tribute to fellow Fulham fan Sam Smith and unsung hero Marek Rodak. You are right. There aren't many chants at the moment for Marek Rodak. So this is to the tune of I'm Not the Only One, and he's sung it.
Your saves are crazy. A 6'4" in Slovakian. And when he keeps a clean sheet, you know he's Fulham's number one.
Oh, excellent. Yes, that is quality.
It's way too slow and it's never going to catch on, but it's great. Absolutely exceptional.
Can we have it again?
Yeah, do it again. I want it again.
One more time.
Your saves are crazy. A 6'4" in Slovakian.
That's the best
and
line.
When he keeps a clean sheet, you know he's Fulham's number one.
I love that. It's nice that he's paid homage to a Fulham fan as well, because to my knowledge, there aren't any chants to the Maccabees or example.
It's right. We're gonna work out. We'll workshop a chant to change the way you kiss me next week. That's where we're really gonna go for it, lad.
Oh. I'd love to be a fly on the wall in that workshop. The four of us.
What do you mean? You'll be a fly on the wall. You'll be on the phone to me.
Yeah. Stood around a flip chart trying to work out the
and a flip chart and a keyboard. We'll be all right. We'll work it out.
You are the musician of the group, George. You will be expected to take
Jack,
a lead.
Don't give Jack a disservice. He's a boy soprano.
Jack doesn't have a band though. You have
not
a band.
Anymore, no, not anymore.
Right, that'll do for the podcast this week. Thank you for all your emails. Keep sending them in. hello@fulhamish.co.uk. It's an astonishing section of the pod that just keeps on growing every week. So thank you very, very much. Only thing we need to do is name the pod. Jack, what would you like to go for?
It's absolute nailed on. Stefano with 007. Brilliant. Brilliant. One of the all-time greats.
How do I write this? Is it double, then zero, and then the word seven?
I think so, yeah. That's okay. What I would go with.
How I'd stylize it, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. 007, Stefano, one of the greats. One of the best three-word reviews we've ever had. So big pat on the back. I love when all of the comments below, like a standout three-word review, are just like, well, he's won then. You just know that the people have given up. They realize that the game is over. Thank you for listening today. Bit of a longer one, but again, how often do you win 7-0?
Well, twice quite in often. One season, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you to my guest, Jack Collins.
Thank you, Sammy.
Peter Rutzler.
Thank you, Sammy.
And George Cooper.
Cheers, lads. Really enjoyed that. Come on, you whites.
You whites.
We'll be back after Saturday's game against Bristol City with all the reaction to that. Fingers crossed Fulham can make it 2-2. Have a great weekend. Come on, you whites.
You know he's Fulham's number one.